Hello, this is Universal Soul Love. This is Dr. Lana Love.
And this is Detective David Love. Welcome to our show.
Today we were meant to have Herb Fried on our show. Now, he might still phone in. Herb Fried started life as a rabbi, and he is a film producer and director, and he has written a really interesting novel called Bashert, which is Jewish for soulmate. And it's a love story about transcending life, loss, and the boundaries we mistakenly place on our lives and hearts. We do hope that he will phone in, but if he doesn't, we will continue talking about soulmate love and what that means in today's society. How does that sound, David?
That sounds good to me. I'm all for it. I mean, I think that's what we're here
you
for.
You and I are pretty well-versed on soulmate love, being soulmates ourselves.
Right, absolutely. I think we've talked about it on the show before. In fact, we were talking about it last week on Valentine's Day with our friend Susan Glenn, who was being our special guest host. And we're in different places again today, different locations, but we are connected. We are in the oneness consciousness, and we're on the line, and I think that we can have a great show talking about soulmate relationships and twin flames. And so, like you said, Lana, that's what we are. And
Absolutely. Margie, I would like to actually buy this book because it sounds like a really interesting love story. And one of the themes that appears in this love story is that it's not necessarily a happy ending or happy process. There's difficulties, and it's a very sort of real love story. And I guess when you talk about soulmate love, while some people might recognize each other immediately and other people might not, living with your soulmate isn't necessarily easy. I mean, people, relationships can be flawed. And that's, part of the process of learning from love. And I guess that's what people need to recognize, that any relationship has its ups and downs and difficulties. And I think that that's one of the things that Herb Fried wanted to write in his book.
Yeah, I got an email from Herb's publicist advertising the book and looking through through guest interviews, and I read the back of the book, and it sort of I got a sense that there was a parallel in about the book. It's an adventure. It sounds like an adventure soulmate relationship, and I got this idea that it was sort of a parallel to our own relationship, how it started and how it's been for us. Although I can't say I've read the book because we do this show every week, and I don't have time to read everyone's books, unfortunately. I'd love to, and I'd love to read this one for sure. And it's unfortunate we don't have Herb with us to talk about it at the moment. But
I agree. I mean, according to the book,
yep.
These Dan and Marion who meet, they are a... Yeah, I believe that he's written a lot about his own life because one of the characters is a screenwriter and a directing former rabbi. they become partners in business as well as life, traveling the world to create movies. And he directs, she writes and edits. Life becomes an amazing adventure until Cancun, which is in Mexico. Incidentally, I actually went to Cancun at the age of 17, beautiful place in Mexico. Ruins of the main civilization there. You can see pyramids there. It's beautiful. And there among the ruins of the main civilization, Marion has an eerie premonition that has the potential to change everything. It is interesting because, of course, with you and me, we run a radio show together. We have other things that we're doing together, like, doing some preparations for possible change in the world. We have done traveling together. We have a number of projects that are happening through the Guardianship Council. And it is very much a relationship which is not just about love, but also about doing things together, having these exciting projects together and giving back to the world, which is actually what I wanted. I very much wanted a soulmate relationship which involves various things that we could do together for the world. And that's exactly what's happened. I'm just absolutely amazed that I asked this of the universe, and the universe gave me so much.
It's been an amazing, I've had the time of my life with you. It's you've just been involved in so many projects with so many people. In fact, I just got off a conference call earlier with a group of people on a project we're working on that's pretty exciting, and you and I are involved in several projects on a sort of on a global scale, I guess, trying to do our part, you know, to implement shock positive change in the world and work on ourselves in the process, because that's really what it's all about, working on our relationship and growing inwards and outwards, and expanding our consciousness and trying to raise the vibration of the planet, which was the mission statement of Universal Soul Love. So we're really doing that. We've been doing that in a big way, and we're very happy to be doing that. You know, it's just been an exciting, everybody says right now it's an exciting time to be in the world. So, and it's certainly an interesting time. In fact, we were just talking to our producer about that. Don Newsom was saying that it's just been a crazy time this past year, and it certainly has. We've had all kinds of challenges in so many different ways, and its impacts on our relationships and certainly on soulmate and twin flame relationships. You really feel that. You feel the energies of the universe playing and the higher forces that play in your life and just all sorts of things to deal with. It's trying to maintain that equilibrium that's so important, that stability. So that's what Lana and I, that's what we've been trying to do, right, Lana?
That's right. Maintaining stability amongst instability. And I think we all feel that there are changes happening. The Schumann resonance has increased. The vibrations are increasing all the time. Sometimes they're positive, sometimes they're negative, but certainly the whole planet seems to be changing politically, economically, increased earthquakes, volcanoes. It's all happening. And, you know, a lot of spiritual leaders are saying that it's our chance to really effectively ascend, to really effectively grow exponentially. And I think that's what we're doing. And I think it's important to recognize that while, you know, some changes might seem negative and frightening, this is all important and necessary in spiritual growth.
Well, it is. I mean, that's really what it's all about. I believe it's about spiritual evolution and personal growth, and that's how I look at this. And in fact, I think I was saying to myself earlier that the perfection is actually in the change. We're always looking for perfection, and yet the perfection is sort of in the alchemical process or the transformational process that's going on, this paradigm shift. And while we're seeing, I like to use the word dark forces, although I understand that there is no evil per se, but that's the meaning we're giving, that I'm giving to this, I'm not giving to this term, but that we often do. But nonetheless, the negativity that we see in the world and that's happening and all the things that are terrible things that are happening are part of that process, and it's part of the ascension process. And that's not to minimize the pain and suffering that we're seeing in the world or in our own lives, or minimizing tests and challenges we're experiencing. But it certainly is part of our growth, individually and collectively, and in our relationships. And we need to keep that perspective that so that we can maintain our stability with ourselves and in our relationships. And, of course, we need to be right with ourselves in order to be right with the world and with others. So the focus is always on ourselves, even while we're trying to make positive change outside ourselves, with others.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I guess one of the questions that people might ask is it not possible to be on your own, making change on your own, I believe it's a meaning. However, I think that process is speeded up when you're with a partner, with your soulmate, because you have the potential to reach incredible heights of joy and bliss. I think you and I put energy into each other's projects, and I think it's just, it really does create more of a, I think you and I together can do more than you and I can do separately, you know. I think that the combined energies through people can do amazing things. And yet, two people's personalities and their various family members and other situations can certainly create a lot of conflict. And certainly, you know, we've had our share. We're not going to lie about that. And I think it's really important to talk openly about that, that, you know, in any partnership relationship, you're going to have conflicts. And part of the success of a relationship is not in not having conflict. Part of the success is how you deal with conflict.
That's so true and excellent point, and something that we do spend quite a bit of time on. You know, my higher self sees conflict as a means of personal growth and as a means of collective growth for our species. But conflict doesn't necessarily mean war, and it doesn't necessarily mean, it can mean many things. Conflict can mean many things, because conflict is a type of change. And in the world right now, with the paradigm shift, we might be looking at an extreme form of change, extreme conflict, because with big conflict brings big change, and we're seeing big changes. And, of course, we're seeing big changes within ourselves, within in each other. The growth that we're seeing, the great awakening, the awakening that people are talking about is what I like to call sleepers, are waking up to the condition of themselves and the condition of the planet, as I've seen, as I did in my own psychic awakening. And it's disconcerting and it's disturbing, and yet it's just looking within ourselves, that introspective self sort of examination of looking at our, what's inside of us, that our, what some people call your shadow self, and looking at our beliefs and our values and re-examining things and knowing who we are and what belongs to other people, so that we can really be our true selves or our authentic selves and move beyond. And that's what this time period is all about, partly. So in relationships, romantic partnerships, soulmate relationships, love relationships are integral to that. Like I've said before, relationships are fantastic tools or vehicles for personal growth. Our first close relationships help us learn a lot about ourselves and about other people in the world. So, and my relationship with Ilana is certainly just that, and it's very, and it's been very exciting, like you said, and I love you for that, by the way.
Never lacks its time, doesn't we? Very, very
no,
true.
It's a lot of fun. We have a great relationship. We have a lot of fun. We have, you know, like you said, we have our challenges like any other couple, but, you know, we've achieved a lot, and I'm proud of you, and I'm proud of what we've accomplished to this point, and so... I would never, you know, take it back for sure. I don't regret anything. I never regret anything in my life.
Oh,
so I'm looking forward to more. I'm always
so sweet.
Looking forward to more good times. We've had lots of good times, mostly good times. So,
yeah.
You know,
it's interesting actually, because you know when you talk about spiritual growth and awakening. Most, well, a lot of people in the spiritual community actually think about meditating up on a hill, you know, and that's certainly, you know, one way of doing it, the monastic life as well. But having a partner is very different. But I do think it can sort of skyrocket things, and certainly we very much proponents for Tantra as well, Tantra being a way of life, not just a way of sexual union, but I guess Tantra personifies that union of two energies, which can be amazing, but can also be quite, can bring a lot of conflict and change. So, you know, that's another aspect to soulmate relationships. I think there's in some ways I feel that there's almost like a gathering force of soulmates in the world. And I know that our good friend Alexander Mevers from Galactic Connections talks about the 444,000.
That's right, the 144,000 twin souls coming together.
And so, yeah.
A lot of people talk about that. Yeah. I guess I can't say I know a lot about that, but a lot of people do talk about it, and Alexandra certainly does.
There's certainly a sense that, you know, there are couples that are coming together to do things for the world, and it's really interesting that there's that focus on soulmates or twin flames, whatever you'd like to call them. We don't necessarily differentiate between soulmates and twin flames. Some people do. But I think when you have a lot in common, and with the sense that you resonate on very much a similar level, I think that's enough to call it a soulmate. Even though, you know, it's recognized you can have members of the soulmates. You know, people that you meet from past lives, and even, you know, people that where there's not a romantic relationship, but there's a very, very close resonance.
Yeah. My definition of, I see that, and many people see that we have soul families and soul tribes and soul sisters and soul brothers, and you know, being a past life regressionist therapist, I've met other soulmates from past lives, past life partners. I know them now, a few of them, and, you know, still love them as part of the soul family. And but I often wonder about the twin flame, because the twin soul, because the definition of a twin soul is supposed to be that missing half of your life, or the missing half of your soul, that one person that you're supposed to be with, or that one spirit that you're supposed to be with forever and throughout eternity. And I often wonder about that, where there are so many soulmates and so many past life relationships, and being that it's about, for me, it's about personal growth. So you experience different types of growth and different relationships. It doesn't necessarily have to be a love relationship. But for me, I see a twin flame as two soulmates coming together in a particular life for a certain type of contract, where there's two people need to learn a particular lesson, or they have a sort of a higher mission together in a lifetime. So that's just my definition. It may not be right, but you may stay with that. You may stay with that same person throughout many lifetimes, maybe for eternity. I don't know.
I know it.
I don't really know.
In Herb Fried's book, By Shirt, he talks about, would you recognize your soul's complement in another? Beyond the bliss of actually finding your soulmate, there's a belief that the universe hinges on predetermined people finding their other half, their best shirt, to maintain cosmic balance. That's interesting. And that seems to be a Jewish a belief in Judaism, that it somehow maintains cosmic balance. So it's sort of an interesting concept.
Yeah.
Of course, in Tantra, there's the understanding that not only is the union of the feminine and masculine important for that balance, but within yourself, you can find the union of the masculine and feminine within yourself as well. So, and obviously, that is possible when you're on your own.
Yeah, our friend Susan What's that?
Easier and harder at the same time. I think just the whole evolution, you know, is much quicker, skyrockets.
Well, I think we certainly accomplish a lot more together than we do as individuals. But I guess, like Susan Glynn would say, it's not about the other person. It's about you, and it's about your relationship with yourself first, and your relationship with everything outside of you, including your partner. So
That's right.
It's true, we're the only ones in our body, so it's about our growth and our experience with the world and with others. So we're looking at it from our point of view and our perception of the other person, but it's about us. So it's certainly, we are social beings, and it seems like we are meant to, you know, have partners and be together with men and women, or as the case may be. Whatever relationship structure you choose, polyamorous or monogamous or whatever your choices in life are, I'm not going to venture into that at the moment. But we have all kinds of relationships, family, professional, friends, social. So we learn from all of them, and but close love relationships are very concentrated. An intimate relationship is a very powerful learning experience. And you and I have proven that you can certainly achieve a lot as two. And I know I have a guide that once said that two minds, and I've said this before on the show, two minds coming together are far more powerful than one alone. And it's not that the power of two minds coming together doesn't double, but it could be a thousandfold, because power is actually exponential. So, and of course, you know, oneness of consciousness is part of our mission statement that we're here to talk about. And I'll just go a little bit further with this. I'll just say that my experience with the divine feminine essence, the goddess on the spirit plane during my awakening, and even now, was kind of interesting, because it makes me realize that goddess consciousness is present as the feminine energy in you, Lana, and in all women. So, and that's true for me with the masculine energy, and that's just part of the oneness of consciousness. So really, when we talk about twin flames, we're sort of talking about the masculine and feminine energy and the divine union in human form coming together. So the idea of a twin flame is really, to me, is about sort of like Mars and Venus coming together, or Aphrodite and Aries, in a way, on a higher level. So it doesn't. Mm-hmm. So we really are all soulmates, or a soul family, as far as the collective consciousness of humanity is concerned. So the twin flame is always present when a man and a woman, or should I say the masculine and feminine energy, unite in a way, you know, metaphysical philosophy.
And of course for gay couples as well, there's a similar balance of occurrence.
Yeah, it's still the masculine and feminine energy coming together in a different way.
Gaia is a feminine energy. The sun is the stag, the masculine energy, and of course the sun is important for producing life on Earth, so you have that balance there as well. Although, of course, in the upper realms of angels, they would say that masculine feminine energy is no longer there, so that you've got the duality there, which disappears in the upper echelons of spiritual feminine. As always, there's both duality and non-duality. And that's one of the difficult things of understanding in our life, that energies can both be different and the same, that there's that constant, almost contradiction of life.
Yeah, you're right. That there does seem to be a contradiction, or, you know, life is kind of a paradox, because duality, as I understand it, is a learning tool. So there is masculine and feminine and all these different opposites on the physical plane and even on parts of the spiritual plane. And yet, at the source, the way I understand it again is that doesn't exist. There is no masculine and feminine energy. There is only energy and consciousness. So it's interesting that
it's funny or not, isn't it?
At different levels.
Yeah. In life, and I think when life happens, you always function on a number of different levels.
Yeah, that's right, and it does get confusing. We are multidimensional beings, so we are operating at different levels, and those levels sometimes seem to contradict each other because they seem to be opposing when they're actually working together quite well.
That part of, I think, wisdom ascending is to accepting the contradictions of life and just going along with it and accepting that. Accepting that that actually makes the world even more fascinating, that those contradictions occur. We might take a break now, and when we come back from the break, I would very much like to talk about soul families and movements towards a tribal way of life in the passage to ascendancy. Hello, welcome back to Universal Soul Love, Dr. Lana Love.
Detective David, welcome back.
Thank you for joining us. So today, unfortunately, Herb Fried wasn't able to join us, but we were going to discuss his novel, Bashirt, about soulmates. And so we're having a wonderful discussion about soulmates. And we thought we'd also perhaps talk about soul families and where the world is going to, whether we're discovering more and more about our soul families. And personally, I feel that the world is going towards, I guess, establishing soul tribes. I know that in our circle, we've met a lot of people who seem to vibrate on a similar level to us. And we've even moved to a different town. And we're looking at maybe the possibility of setting up an off-grid little community. It's still just an idea in our head, but something we'd very much love to do.
Right. We've had different people on our show, like George Neo, who was establishing one up in rural New South Wales, Ethereum, and we've met quite a few times. We haven't gotten too far, but we're meeting with other groups. And so we're headed in a positive direction, and lots of people are doing this, and lots of people are already successful with this, communal living. Not quite what went on in the 60s with these love communes, but these are more, they're called eco-villages or self-sustainable living communities. Lots of people listening to our show have heard of these or they're involved in these projects. So we're very excited about that, and we're going to continue with that. And that's a big part of our mission with Universal Soul Love and projects that we're involved in. So, and of course, a big part of that has to do with relationships. Everything has to do with relationships, really. And a community or a society is a bigger relationship between a large number of people. And in order for it to run successfully, there's a lot that goes into that. There's a lot that goes into a relation to running a successful relationship where people are getting along. So we've been sort of exploring
that. And I guess
that,
just as with soulmates, that conflict is, you know, inherent in the whole contract. And I guess with soul families or soul groups, if you choose to live together in a community like that, you are going to have conflict. But the question is whether you might actually need that conflict for personal growth as well.
I don't know, and that may be something, maybe the higher forces or cosmic administrators, whatever name you give to them, or God, the creator, may phase out conflict altogether. That may be the final outcome. Contracts, pre-life agreements, those things may be phased out, or they may be modified and amended. But certainly we all want to have harmonious relationships of all kinds. I think that's the goal that most people do have. So,
well, we do want them, Yeah, David, you seem to have pointed out time and time again how important conflict is for growth. So I guess we do need a bit of measured conflict, but not too much conflict.
Well, again, we're funny. Human beings are funny because Herb Fried, was originally a Jewish, a Hebrew
Rabbi.
Rabbi, yes. Sorry, thank you. But he was also a horror writer, horror movie director. He produced a slasher film, a teen slasher film in the 80s called Graduation Day, which he's well known for, and he's done Haunts and a number of other movies. And so now he's gone on to write love stories, and it's kind of interesting. I think one of the questions we were going to ask him was, why love? Why now? And why is it important? And we know that why it's important, it's always been important. Most of us know that. But why at this time? Why is there such a change? Because in our societies, so many people, we love cop shows, and we love murder movies and horror movies and war movies, and we seem to have a fascination with this and a preoccupation with violent conflict as a form of entertainment. So there is a contradiction here when we say we want peace. There's something in our human nature that seems to, that I don't quite understand, but on some level, we seem to find this exciting. Yet when war breaks out, we don't want it anymore if we're involved in it or in some kind of any kind of violent conflict or any kind of high-level conflict. So,
yeah, we're a silly species, aren't we?
We are. I don't know. I don't know what to make of that. I've been examining human behavior all my life.
Yes, indeed.
I don't know what you make of human behavior.
Well, I believe, you know, those of us that believe the existence of graves, whether they are a separate species or whether they are our future selves or not, we know that they seem to have much less conflict, but they seem to have lost some of their personality and hence the apparent interest in interbreeding with us. So I guess conflict does bring some interest in personality. I guess we don't want to get to the stage where we have no conflict and we end up being very boring. I guess life on the reason why we have life on Earth and for our incarnations is a very interesting place. It's a place of great movement and change, and conflict is part of that. I guess perhaps part of what we need to learn is to have conflict in a less conflicted way. You know, perhaps we can have conflict without all the deaths and the wars and without the horrible abuse that occurs.
Absolutely.
Perhaps measured conflict is the way to go.
Measured conflict. I mean, I see a long time ago when I was going through my awakening and I wrote my first book, Illusion of the Body, I was seeing conflict on every level. I was seeing conflict on the microscopic level with atoms clashing into each other and within the body with our immune systems attacking viruses and bacteria, and on the macro level we're seeing planets collide and quasars and explosions and meteors hitting planets and whatnot, and cosmic forces colliding, and even in nature, you know, we have many activists listening to the show, animal rights advocates. And you and I are as well. We believe in the right to life and the right to free movement and protecting animals and victims. And yet, in nature, wild animals are quite violent towards each other. They eat each other. Bears, tigers, lions, sharks, crocodiles, they eat meat, and they're quite violent in it. And so are cats and dogs. I've seen our cat go out and eat birds and mice, and we feel really bad for those animals, and yet they're eating to live, because I once heard from my higher self that some things must live so other things can, some things must die so that other things can live, and that's how it's been. And certainly do have compassion for the pain and suffering of others, and yet this is the world that we live in. In fact, I was talking to a channeler the other day who we were both saying, pain is the condition of the world, and it's the aches and pains of life are part of that. And pain serves a purpose. If you drop a rock on your toe, your body will scream out, "Hey, you just broke your toe, and I just want to let you know." So it's unpleasant, but everything seems to, even fear serves a certain purpose, a limited purpose. So everything seems to serve a purpose to some degree. It's just how far things go and how we perceive things and how we take things. So certainly I'm not for, I'm a, I when it comes to domestic violence or any kind of violence. I'm certainly opposed to that. I did criminal defense for a long time and worked in many different areas of investigation and saw a lot of pain and suffering, emotional and mental and physical, and certainly have a lot of compassion for people who are suffering. It's a very difficult
It is a great conundrum, I think, to know whether pain is a necessary condition of the world or not. And I know you and I talked so much about the matrix, tipping outside the matrix, and the idea that it is possible that the pain that we have on planet Earth is a condition of the matrix, and that in fact that pain is other entities are feeding off that pain, in which case it's actually not a necessary condition. On the other hand, we know that we can grow from pain and that sometimes conflict is very important. So I don't know the answer to the question. Maybe it's the same thing. Maybe, as I said, measured conflict is what we need. What we don't need is extreme suffering. And what we don't need, and what we absolutely need to strive to stop, is any entities thriving on that. I know Michael Tellinger, we're friends with Michael Tellinger, and of course he's a wonderful person who is a leader of the Ubuntu movement, as well as, you know, a writer and a speaker on the topic of the origins of humans. And he believes, from information that he has ascertained, that we're genetically engineered as a slave species. His book is called Slave Species. And many other people believe that is true. And a part of our awakening is to, in fact, realize that our DNA, part of our DNA, part of our codes have been blocked, and to unblock those codes, and that we have so much more potential. So understanding that and stepping outside the matrix is a really important part of our ascendancy process. I know that Michael Tellinger, when we were discussing the issue of pain and whether pain is necessary or not, he is of the opinion that pain is actually a predicament of the matrix. And that's part of the process of other entities and energies feeding upon us. And his opinion was that, yes, while wildlife nature on Earth does attack and kill, that it's not so on other planets. Now, I would love to debate that with him even further. I would love to know whether other planets and other systems have a different set of codes, different set of morals. It's a great conundrum. Are you still there, David?
It is. Yes, it is. I remember our conversation with author Michael Tellinger. I don't know a lot about the Ubuntu movement. I haven't been too involved in it, but I do like the conversations that we had with him over dinner and lunch, talking about pain and about the slave species. And I do believe that as well. And I've had those kinds of messages from my own higher self, my oversoul, or whatever name you give it, maybe this is the old paradigm with pain and conflict, or the one that we're in now, may not be true in the future. My knowing, rather than my intuitive sense, is that it's absolutely true that there are other systems outside of this one, outside of this reality, where those things do not exist. In fact, the astral body doesn't feel pain, generally, unless you allow it to, when you're fully in your spirit body. But there are places of bliss where you don't have any kind of, even an astral body, and you exist as light, and you exist in a very pleasurable space. And, you know, there are all kinds of systems with different compositions. And, you know, there's the dark side of the astral realm, and there are beautiful places. There's Shambhala. There's all sorts of places. So it's we truly live in a multiverse, and we don't even know it. And then there's so many questions about that, like where the reasons for why we don't know where we came from before we were born, or we don't know for sure. Most of us, scientifically aware people go when they die. I mean, I've done mediumship training and everything else, and I've been floored by it. But nonetheless, if I'm going by scientific standard of proof and that sort of thing, I mean, it's factually, with evidence, it's very difficult to prove. There's some things that you can't prove, but that doesn't invalidate them either. So we have to keep an open mind and just we believe what we believe. But I've come into contact with all sorts of, I guess I'd call them dark spirits or astral predators, and people have come to me about that issue, and it's something that I deal with regularly. And certainly we're dealing with some of the projects that we're working on. That's an issue that's being addressed, these astral predators that have infiltrated our world and disrupted the matrix that we've created. I believe even the old souls no longer know what this matrix is about, this holographic, simulated environment, reality that we're in. Originally, my higher self told me that it was created as a game, the game of life, and then it became the subject of scientific study for the means of personal growth. And later on, other species came in and sort of usurped the system, and we became controlled, and deals were made, and we became the slave species. So it was over a long period of time, but initially we were in control, and we were very knowledgeable and aware of this game. And then it became the human experiment, and then it became the slave species, is my understanding. So here we are trying to take back our personal power and take back control of this system that we keep reincarnating into without really understanding why we're doing it.
That's a very, very true. And I guess one of the things to realize then is that you don't actually necessarily have to go fully into pain. When something happens that is upsetting to us, we can look for the lesson in it. We can use pain as a way to transmute or rise above our ego, our attachment to ourselves. And that is perhaps truly the spiritual use of pain. If we indulge in pain, we keep allow it to destroy us and hurt us, then we may well be feeding the whatever it is that feeds off us. So it's very important to keep that in perspective. But very, very interesting questions, fascinating questions about the world, which hopefully one day we'll know the answer to. But we certainly do live in a multiverse, and certainly having relationships, soulmate relationships, are a very exciting way to have a partner on this journey in life, this adventure of life. And radio show with you and discussing these things is very, very exciting to me, and I hope it's exciting to our listeners, all the issues we raise, all the questions we raise.
Yeah, this is part of our adventure, this radio show, and all the people we meet and the discussions we have and the work we do. It's enjoyable, and it's been fun and exciting, and learning how to deal, it helps us deal for us. It's personal growth for us on this show and talking about these issues, because it helps us deal with our own issues and manage our own lives, things like pain and the tests and challenges of life, and learning to not to respond rather than to react, and to step back as the independent observer so that you can make the best possible decision in any situation. And maybe I've even learned about heart intelligence, and when you're in a stressful situation, dropping down into your heart center to have clarity and maintain your stability, your emotional stability. So there's all kinds of techniques. I'm sure we'll be talking about this more on show in the future, and hopefully we'll try to get director Herb Fried on the show next time. But we had a great show today, a lot of fun.
I've got some interesting shows lined up in the future.
We do. Yeah, we've got, I believe we have Magenta Pixie next week, and we have a few more. I'm not sure who else we have coming up, but I know we've got some great shows. We always do. So looking forward to that. Looking forward to Magenta being on the show as our special guest.
And then we'll also be having a channeler on our show that you recently met, David, who will be talking about ascendancy.
Right. Always relevant at this time with the paradigm shift. So always looking forward to that one as well, that interview.
Absolutely. So, well, yeah. We've got to finish on.
Yeah.
So that was very exciting to talk about soulmates. We hope to have Herb Fried on our show at another time. And that's it from us at Universal Soul Love. Love to all our listeners. Big hug. Bye for now.
Bye for now.